Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by Indeed. Post your job today at indeed.com/creative and find out why more than 3 million companies use Indeed for hiring. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host, and I'm also the author of a bunch of books, The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and the new book, Herding Tigers, which is about how to lead creative people effectively. Whatever you do, I don't care if you sell auto parts, I don't care if you're heading a marketing firm, I don't care if you sell insurance or you manage a team of people, whatever you are doing, at the end of the day, what you're trying to do is create fans for your product or your service. If you can create fans for what you do, for what you deliver into the marketplace, your job is going to be a lot easier because those fans are going to carry the message of what you're doing out into the marketplace for you. When you don't create fans, you have to go out and win every single new client, every single new piece of business. But when you create fans, you create an environment in which a lot of people are helping you get the message out because they just love what you do. Well, today's guest is an expert in how to create fans. His name's David Meerman Scott. He's the author of a new book. It's called Fanocracy. And we're going to have a really practical, tactical conversation about how to create fans for what you do. And again, it doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter the nature of your business. If you want to create raving fans for your product or your service, David is going to help us do that today. Before we jump into that conversation, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Indeed. So when you start your hiring process, you may have questions. You're going to find good applicants to choose from. Where are they going to come from? What about education and experience? And how will you know you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in 10 minutes, and you can use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants fast. Sponsored jobs on Indeed accelerate the hiring process even further, boosting your post with premium placement in relevant search results, helping you reach even more applicants. Indeed gives you smart tools to help you make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team, which is so important. Post your job today at indeed.com/creative and find out why more than 3 million companies use Indeed for hiring. Indeed, the world's number one job site. We thank Indeed for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have on the show today David Meerman Scott. He is the author of many books and the author of the new book, the co-author, I should say, with your daughter, Reiko, the new book, Fanocracy, Turning Fans into Customers and Customers into Fans. David, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Todd, it's so great to be on. I've been following you for ages since we met about a decade ago, so I'm honored to be on.
And the same with me. It's funny how our paths kind of cross. It's sort of like ships passing in the night, like you've been speaking at events the day before I get there and that kind of thing. But it's great to connect in person again.
It is. It's awesome.
I love this word, fanocracy. And I would love if you could just start by describing or defining that for us. What is a fanocracy?
A fanocracy is when fans rule. And it's an organization that puts the people, the customers, the humans in front of everything they do, and more importantly than products and services.
And you argue in the book that fandom is hardwired. It's something that's just part of our human nature to want to be fans. Why is that important to us as we think about the work that we do every day or the products that we're creating or the services we're delivering? Why is it important to keep that in mind?
We dug into that really deeply, my daughter and I. We started this project with a thesis. The thesis was that my daughter and I were already massive fans of the things that we love. For example, I love live music. I've seen 790 live music shows in my life. I know it's crazy. And I have an Excel spreadsheet that has as many as I can remember listed on it. Starting when I was age 15, the first show I saw was Aerosmith at Madison Square Garden, but the second show I saw was the Ramones at my high school, and I was in the front row.
At your high school?
The Ramones played my high school for $100. It was before their first album came out.
That was crazy.
It was crazy. It was amazing. And I'm still going. I've been to 75 Grateful Dead concerts. I mean, it's nutty. So I'm a massive fan of music. My daughter Reiko, massive fan of Harry Potter. She's seen every movie multiple times, read every book multiple times, went to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Orlando several times, went to the UK to go to the studio tour where the movies are filmed. But she also wrote an 80,000 word novel, an alternative ending to the Harry Potter series, where Draco Malfoy is a spy for the Order of the Phoenix, and put that on a fan fiction site. It's been downloaded thousands and thousands of times, commented on hundreds of times. So our thesis was that you can, any organization, any company, nonprofit, B2B, government agency, it doesn't matter, doctor, lawyer, dentist, big company, small company, can create fans and get people who are so passionate about what they do, in the same way that I'm passionate about live music and the Grateful Dead, and my daughter's passionate about Harry Potter. And so she, you know, obviously different gender, obviously different generation. She was born in Tokyo. My wife's Japanese, so my daughter's mixed race. And she's a neuroscientist. She graduated with a neuroscience degree from Columbia University and now is in her final year of medical school. So she was really important to this thesis that we could look at the neuroscience behind what's going on in our brains when we become a fan of something. And we spoke with a number of different neuroscientists to learn what's going on. And then we sort of figured out on our own that what's really going on when we become fans of something is it's a personal connection. So yeah, I love live music, but what I love most about it is I'm with my friends and we have a common language around the music that we're seeing, and we're in a part of a tribe. Same thing with Reiko and Harry Potter. And so neuroscience tells us that it's hardwired in our brains as humans to want to be part of a tribe of people, because when we're part of a tribe, we feel safe and secure among those people who we know. That goes back, you know, tens of thousands of years as a survival technique. When you're with your own tribe, you're safe. And if you're among people who you don't know, you're dangerous and vulnerable. It's dangerous and you're vulnerable. And so then we looked at, okay, well, what does that mean for growing fans? And there's a neuroscientist named Edward T. Hall who identified this idea of proximity and the different distances. So further than about 12 feet or so is called public space. And then from about 12 feet to about 4 feet is called social space. Inside of 4 feet is personal space. So the closer you get to someone, the more powerful the connection. Positive if you know them, like at a Grateful Dead concert or at a cocktail party. And it can be negative if you don't, a crowded elevator, a crowded subway car. You don't know those people. You feel like your fight or flight instinct may have to kick in. So what that means for fandom is the more you can put yourself into proximity, your customers into proximity with one another, with your employees, the more you're likely to build fans. And it's sort of this human connection that's really, really important.
So one of the reasons you say proximity is important is you talk about the importance of shared emotion.
Yes.
Which has an enormous effect on how well we do.
It's really important.
As a matter of fact, I think one of the phrases you use is humanity builds a loyal fanocracy, right? So
it
can you
does,
talk a little
yeah.
about that shared emotion? How does that play into building a fanocracy?
Yeah, so this emotions that sharing is so powerful that ultimately when you share an emotion with somebody else, you have that bond with them. And because you now know and trust them because you shared that emotion, they feel like they're part of your tribe. And so you could be an enterprise software company or a dentist, or it doesn't really matter. But that if that emotion is shared and connected, then that person is likely to become, as I call it, a fanocracy. You've built now a fanocracy. That person becomes your fan. And it's really powerful. And some people say to me, all right, David, that sounds good, but I run the kind of business that we can't possibly get close physically to all of our customers. Maybe it's a global business or a virtual business. And it turns out there's another aspect of neuroscience called mirror neurons that become really important as well. So mirror neurons are the part of our brain that fire when we see or hear someone do something as if we are doing it ourselves. So Todd, if I take a bite of a lemon, it's really tart and it makes my eyes close and my eyes are even watering a little bit. My mouth puckers up, the saliva glands start to do their thing, and it's like that tartness, it's crazy powerful. If you had seen me bite into that lemon, and even maybe just hearing me talk about biting into that
right
lemon.
Now that's happening to me.
Isn't that crazy? It's amazing. Just hearing me talk about it. That's your mirror neurons kicking in as if your brain is firing as if you are doing that action. Mm-hmm. Here's what that means for creatives, for marketing people, for entrepreneurs. When you use photographs and video effectively in your marketing, on your website, in your materials, in your creative, you're creating, through this use of mirror neurons, an actual emotional connection with existing and potential customers. Yet so many organizations, when they do their creative, use inane stock photos to represent people, which is the dumbest thing, because when you're using stock photos, everybody knows it's ripped out of a catalog. But when you're using photos of real people, your customers, your employees, your partners, it's incredibly powerful. And more importantly than that, if the photograph is shot within personal space, inside of 4 feet, and the people are looking directly at the camera, that is creating a virtual emotional connection through the power of mirror neurons, because our brains are firing as if we are actually in the same room with the people in that photograph. That's exactly why you feel you know a movie star. You've never met that movie star, but you've seen them on the screen and your brain tells you you know them. So a simple technique for all of us, entrepreneurs and marketing people, creatives, is to use real photographs of real people, cropped as if you're within 4 feet, people looking at the camera. And this actually explains the humble selfie, which a lot of people dismiss as being for kids or being frivolous, when in fact, a selfie is incredibly powerful as a form of creating an emotional connection and should be used often.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk about vulnerability as it relates to this concept, because and I want to do that through the lens of how I became a fan of two completely different bands. Actually, let me because of the live music connection. Okay.
Yeah.
The three best concerts I've ever been to, and please don't judge me if you don't like this kind of music. I'm saying this to the audience because they're going to probably, some people probably roll their eyes. Okay. So the first one is a Coldplay concert from, I think it was like 2009, maybe. Okay.
Nice.
The second one is a band called Old Crow Medicine Show.
Which
I love, and some people may not have heard of, but they're just phenomenal, phenomenal bands. They're like a roots country kind of band.
Yes.
And the third is a guy named Frank Turner.
Oh, I don't know
Frank Turner. And so Frank Turner is a guy I'd never heard of before. I show up at this club here in Cincinnati where I live, and Frank Turner is going to play a concert. I'd never been to a show. I'd never even heard his music before. And from the very first song, I was instantly a fan. And the reason is he played a song. And then after the first song, he said, all right, we have three rules tonight friends, and he started calling us friends, right?
Nice.
So three rules tonight. And he said, you know, and he, I won't say all of them because some of them have some language, you know, in the maintain.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But he said basically like, be kind to one another, respect one another's space. And if you know the lyrics to a song, you have to sing it at the top of your lungs.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, nice.
And I was instantly drawn in. And this guy, and as I was thinking about those three instances, David, I realized every single one of those acts completely spent themselves on stage. They were right. not there for themselves. They were there for the audience, and they did right. whatever it took to spend themselves. It's a very vulnerable place to be.
And so
I want to ask you about like the role of vulnerability in creating fans, because as I think about those shows, I think, man, they were at one point, Chris Martin from Coldplay was like laying on stage completely exhausted because he'd been running around, like trying to entertain, you know, Frank Turner was like exhausted, sweating, like his shirt was like hanging out of his pants, like, you know, Old Crow Medicine Show, they're running around, the guy, the lead singer's like with the fiddles, like running around. I mean, it's just crazy. They're like so vulnerable. You know, what is the role of vulnerability in building connection in Fanocracy?
It's such an interesting question. I really thank you for asking that. So I first want to riff a little bit on a show that I saw that all of my friends laughed at me for going to. You know, all my music friends, they're like, "You got to be crazy." So I went to a Miley Cyrus show.
Yeah.
And okay. So when I just say I went to a Miley Cyrus show, you can roll your eyes, but. If you're a music fan, it was Miley Cyrus at a club, the House of Blues in Boston, and she was backed by the Flaming Lips, which is quite fabulous in many, many ways. But she absolutely made herself vulnerable. She was putting herself out there with her outfits and her music. And she's like, "I'm not going to play any of my hits. I'm not going to play any of the stuff that I'm known for. I am here to be with this amazing band and sing some new music that we just put out." And it was an amazing, amazing show for so many reasons. The idea of vulnerability is kind of the opposite of what we just talked about with stock photos. I mean, the whole idea of so many organizations who just talk about products and services using, this I call it gobbledygook language, flexible, scalable solutions for improving business process, innovative language like that. But when you're vulnerable, you're putting yourself out in a way that people see that you're real. People see that you're an actual human being, or a company, if you're a larger organization, an organization that has human beings in it. And so we learned as we were doing this research for Fanocracy that when an organization does put their employees out there in such a way that they're, number one, they're vulnerable, as you describe it, but another aspect that's really important is they showcase their passion. And I think those two things go hand in hand. So people have passion for all kinds of different things. You and I for live music, my daughter for Harry Potter, and you know, we talk with people of all kinds of different passions. And when you show those passions to the world, You're being a little bit vulnerable, number one, by doing it. And number two, passion is infectious. We ran across a dentist. His name is Dr. John Marashi. He's a dentist in Los Angeles. And he came to me about 2 years ago at an event I was speaking at, a Tony Robbins event. And he said, "David, you know, I'm a dentist. It's incredibly crowded. I'm in Los Angeles. If you do a search for dentists, Los Angeles, there's thousands and thousands of names that come up. You know, how do I stand out?" And I didn't use the vulnerable word, but I said, you know, put yourself out there, showcase your passions, show us who you are as a person. And I said, "Dr. Marashi, what do you love to do?" And he goes, "God, I love to skateboard. And I love to wear bow ties. And I love my family." So I said, "Cool, why don't you do that? Why don't you put that out there? Show us who you are." And 6 months later, he shared with me his Instagram. And if you just go Google Dr. John Marashi, you would find it. He's now got 13,000 followers on his Instagram. So he makes himself vulnerable. He has photographs of his young family. He's got young children. Now, I'm not saying everyone needs to put photographs of their family, but he does. And he has photographs of him skateboarding. He's a dentist. He's skateboarding. He has photographs of him skateboarding in his practice. He has photographs of himself skateboarding with a bow tie on. I mean, it's really crazy. And now, if you're looking for a dentist in Los Angeles, you know, and you run across the skateboarding bow tie wearing dentist, he's put himself out there. That's who a lot of people want to go to. He told me just by doing this, he's increased his business by 30%, new patients by 30%. And I do think that it's, you know, I use the word passion, but going hand in hand is the idea of vulnerability. And he's done a really, really good job with it. And I think that's something that any organization can do and any person can do.
I want to ask you about one more aspect. We're going to skip all the way to the end of the book, but you talk about the importance of developing employees who are fans. And yes. I think we've all interacted with companies that talk a good game, but then when you interact with one of their customer service people or you interact with one of their salespeople, it just leaves you feeling like it just leaves you with a bad taste in your mouth. Like they're not living up to what they say. So how do we develop employees who are fans?
So there's a great chapter to write. I've been on the advisory board of a company called HubSpot since the very beginning. HubSpot is a sales and marketing and customer service software. And I joined their advisory board in 2007 when they had zero customers. They've now have $650 million in revenue traded on the New York Stock Exchange. And HubSpot became my anchor story in the ideas of how to build employees who are fans and then how that helps to grow a business. And at the time I was writing, they were ranked, I think, number 15 or something on the Glassdoor listing of companies to work for. And just a couple of weeks ago for the year 2020, they were named the number one company in the entire United States to work for as voted on by their employees. Now that says a heck of a lot. Yes. Above every other company. And I had a chance, I know Brian Halligan, the CEO, quite well. He and I are both Grateful Dead freaks. We wrote a book called Marketing Lessons from the Grateful Dead together. So I've watched what he's done to build fans over the last more than one decade. And we also spoke with their chief people officer. Her name is Katie Burke. So they do a few things to develop employees who are incredibly passionate about HubSpot. And in turn, those really passionate employees then create fans of HubSpot who then grow the business like a weed. You know, they're growing like crazy. I think they've got a $7 billion market cap or something from a standing start of zero when I first started working with them. And the first thing is they share everything. They have a wiki that, you know, practically everything is shared on there. You can see the slide decks that they share with Wall Street analysts, any employee. You can see the business plans of the company. They share so much that for legal reasons with the SEC, they had to make every single employee a registered insider. That's the first thing, is they are incredibly transparent. The second thing they do that's so cool is they absolutely trust their employees, so much so that there's no vacation policy. The vacation policy is take whatever you need. You don't have to fill out a form. You just have to make sure people cover for you and your supervisor knows. But, you know, it's you take what you need. And same thing with work from home. Same thing if you need time to do what you love. You know, if you run marathons, you got a race coming up, you need to train, you need to stop work at 3 o'clock every day. Cool, do it. As long as you get your work done, doesn't matter when you do it. Incredibly powerful stuff. These ideas and others have made the employees of HubSpot become fans of the place that they work. I'm going to quote my daughter here. Passion is infectious. So when you see that people are passionate about the place that they work, In turn, that passion becomes infectious so that the employees then sharing with customers, potential customers, create what we call fanocracy, the title of the book. And I've spoken at the HubSpot Inbound Conference now every year since they've had it. I think it's been 6 or 7 years. It's a love fest. There's 25,000 people who come to Boston. Many of them pay their own way. They don't even have to be customers of HubSpot to come to the conference. And they're there because they want to be part of that tribe. They want to be together with the people they know at HubSpot and together with like-minded people. It's a true fanocracy built from the employees outward.
That's fantastic. Well, you and Reiko did a wonderful job with this book. It's called Fanocracy, Turning Fans into Customers and Customers into Fans. David, where can people find you online if they want to come find you?
Thanks, Todd. I really appreciate it. We've got a site at www.fanocracy.com. Bunch of great stuff on there. Free resources. There's some downloads and so on, videos. And then on the social networks, most of them, I'm DM Scott. That's DMSCOTT. And my co-author daughter, Reiko, is Allison_Reiko, Allison_Reiko.
Fantastic. Well, David, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
It's been awesome, Todd. I'm so glad we were able to do it.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe or join the email list at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.